For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to have giving our talk tonight, Ogetsu Lori Belzer, who's one of our founding members of Ancient Dragon Zengate, and also now serves as our sewing teacher for sewing Buddha's robe. So thank you very much, Ogetsu, for being here.
Thank you very much, Taigen, and good evening, Bodhisattvas. Well, as some of you know, yesterday afternoon, some of us participated. We enacted actually a ceremony of receiving and bestowing the Bodhisattva precepts. And this is a ceremony known as Jukai. And Douglas has a fun example of one of the aspects of Jukai, which is receiving the Bodhisattva precepts. I don't know. Somewhere I think I heard that the character Ju was actually giving and receiving.
I think it's accepting, but
accepting,
maybe,
yeah.
But maybe
accepting,
it has both
yeah.
sides.
Kai is precepts, and five members of our precious Sangha received the 16 great Bodhisattva precepts. They received a Dharma name, which Taigen generously cooked up, imagined, bestowed upon these wonderful people. They all had the name Lotus, I think, in them. Didn't everyone have Lotus? Kind of neat. And so during this ceremony of precept taking, you receive a Dharma name. You also receive a Rakusu. And I kind of like it because, like, you receive something that you made, so it gets given back to you. And, you know, many of you have Rakusus, have sewn Rakusus, but some of you haven't. And I highly recommend it. The only thing is then you have to make this, like, deep vow to save all beings and practice endlessly till you've attained Buddhahood, and even then, practice even more. So, it's a big commitment. You also receive lineage papers that wend their way all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha, as well as, and that's in the sort of male identified lineage, and the female identified lineage, it wends its way back to Prajnaparamita, the mother of all Buddhas. So you actually get two sets of lineage papers these days. So there's quite a bit that happens. But this whole journey starts out with a kind of tender appeal. You know, the way this works is when it enters someone's mind that I think I would like to receive the Bodhisattva precepts. There's a tender moment when you actually approach a teacher such as Taigen and say, may I please receive these Bodhisattva precepts from you? There's real openness to that request. You know, sometimes people say something like, oh, I want to sew a Rakusu. And the sewing a Rakusu is indeed a wonderful thing, sewing Buddha's robes. But it's not just a sewing practice, but it's actually a big undertaking and commitment on the part of many people, not to mention the teacher. And as some of you know, I'm also a sewing teacher in this lineage, so it's a little bit of a commitment on my part as well. I would say that this ceremony has some parts to it, which, again, many of you are familiar with or have seen it. But I think the themes, there are three main themes, which are pretty cool themes. I don't think you have to go through a precept-taking ceremony to have them, but I think they're the themes of someone who's drawn to Buddhism. And I would say the first one is gratitude for this opportunity to move towards awakening with others, with every being, with every person, with every rock and stone and pebble and tile and tree and pond and lake and Donald Trump. to be grateful, to have that impulse to actually recognize that in ourselves. There's a whole bunch of other, you know, fonts of gratitude and, you know, homages to many Buddhas before Buddha and after Buddha and bodhisattvas and such. But that gratitude is endless in our practice. The second thing I think is a major theme is refuge taking. You know, the precepts sometimes are thought of as something like commandments. You know, I vow not to kill, I vow not to, you know, intoxicate body, mind of self or others, I vow not to disparage Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. That there's a lot of vows that happen. But there's also a refuge. The first three precepts are the three refuges. I take refuge in Buddha. I take refuge in Dharma. I take refuge in Sangha. And, you know, refuge is a big theme in our practice. We're actually all, when we become aware of our karma and the karma of the world we live in, we need some safety and protection from ourselves and from ourself that's boundless and extends throughout the universe. You know, there's a lot of violence. There's a lot of black holes, you know, constantly eating up whatever comes their way. And the other theme, the third theme, is vow. And so we do take these very, you know, concrete vows. You know, I vow to benefit all beings. I vow not to harbor ill will. Things like this. So they're not all that separate, but I think sometimes it's helpful to think of those things. And again, those of you who have no interest ever in going through the formal ceremony, which can feel a little bit like the Catholic Church or some other rituals, you know, bar mitzvahs, I guess, bat mitzvahs, rites of passage, you know. Still, if you're here, I think that you probably feel some sense of gratitude, some deep need for refuge, and some wish to fulfill a vow to be gentler in this world. When we sew Buddha's robes, a rakusu or an okesa, with every stitch, we chant silently, typically, though it kind of would be fun to chant it out loud. I take refuge in Buddha, I take refuge in Dharma, I take refuge in Sangha. And this, you know, refuge, returning, going, fleeing to a place of shelter for safety and sanctuary, is sewn into these garments. So this is an embodiment of awakening. I think Sawaki Koto Roshi, who revived sewing practice in Soto Zen and really popularized it, you might say, or rescued it from obscurity, the practice of sewing these robes by practitioners, I think he said something like, this is a mysterious practice, but that, you know, our skin is our okesa, or our rakasu, or Buddha's robe, on some level. So maybe if we chant, I take refuge in Buddha, I take refuge in Dharma, I take refuge in Sangha, silently, as we go about our lives or our deaths, like Dogen did. Actually, Dogen, at the end of his life, wrote the words for I take refuge in Buddha, I take refuge in Dharma, I take refuge in Sangha, and tacked it on a pillar in his, the room where he was sick and dying, and circumambulated chanting I take refuge in Buddha, which in Japanese is Namo Kiye Butsu, I take refuge in Dharma, Namo Kiye Ho, I take refuge in Sangha, Namo Kiye Sa. So maybe that's all that was left of him at the end of his life, was refuge. Just FYI, so, you know, sometimes actually when I teach sewing, I suggest that students say Namo Kiye Butsu as they sew, probably because I come from a Japanese lineage, but also I like this term of Namo Kiye Butsu. You know, Namo is like a term for respect or homage, and Kiye is to wholeheartedly devote or throw oneself, physically plunge into Buddha. That's a real, like, giving over to something that we can't possibly know. So I think to something like suchness, I guess. So there's a deep act of faith, but of physicality to our practice, you know, and that's not just sewing. It's permeates all the bodily activity that we have. So it's a pretty, it's the embodiment of awakening. And so you know, these robes, like, it's a little warm in here today, I think. Or is it just perimenopause? but you know,
failed air conditioning.
So there's a little reminder, you know, it's like taking refuge even in the midst of this heat in Buddha, you know, the awakening mind, in Dharma, the truth of our reality, the body of that awakened mind, and in Sangha. Let's not forget that. We always say Namo Kiye Butsu. But somebody once told me that Suzuki Roshi's son said, oh yeah, well, when we say Namo Kiye Butsu, we always know that what we're really saying is Namo Kiye Butsu, Namo Kiye Ho, Namo Kiye Sa. So let's not leave out the other two. Maybe we should just start saying, like, Namo Kiye Sa, I take refuge in Sangha, and then realize that that's equal to Buddha. That these robes actually, if you read Dogen's Keiso Kodoku, which is his writings on the power of the okesa, on the power of Buddha's robe, it says, this is Buddha's body. That's pretty powerful stuff. It was said, actually, that, you know, these rakasus and okesas, and, you know, maybe I'll just illustrate the point. These little envelopes are for rakasus, but somehow I always accumulate other things, like some fragrant packet to fragrance it, some chanting here, you know, what pops out is the robe chant. But just to give people who aren't familiar with this an idea, maybe I'll ask Douglas to trot this over so people can see for a little show and tell. But you can look at each stitch, and also on the back is some calligraphy from Taigen and my Dharma name and his Dharma name. So, take Buddha's body over there. People can take a look. Jenny's got one. So like the distances between the number of stitches, like, you know, if you're in a hurry, you're like, let me make that distance a little wider. Maybe I'll just make it a little closer because I want to like make it, I don't want to stop doing this, right? But each of those stitch, you're chanting silently, Namukie Butsu, Namukie Ho, Namukie Sa. And there's even like old rules that seem to have even come from like Buddha's time about the construction of these garments. Rakusus are a relatively new invention compared to Buddha's time, but they're basically just mini okesas, these bigger robes that we wear. But there's, you know, some rules, like there are in all Zen things, but even Buddha had rules of the color, the kind of fabric, and the construction. What's this comment?
We're just appreciating your stitches.
Oh, thanks.
You may have seen this.
My eyes aren't so good anymore, so.
Douglas, maybe you can come around.
Yes, I think David. Thank you for displaying that.
I'll take a look too.
It was just to kind of give you a sense of what I'm talking about if you haven't actually done this, right? And so on the back, actually that's the other thing that starts to happen. When you first sew the front, you can see there's that fabric that covers, the white fabric covers the back of those stitches. But when you start to sew the frame, then you can see the back of your stitches. So if you're like, oh, I'm doing a really good stitch on the front, and then you're like, oops, I forgot all about what they look like on the back. And this is, you know, a teacher named Yvonne Ranwin said to me, this is your mind. And I looked at my rock, and so I said, oh, my God. But you can't get away from it.
Pretty
like,
good.
I hope your okay, so it turns out that nicely. Or one of our great, great, great sewing teachers, Blanche Hartman, once said, I was stitching on my okesa and I was like, ooh, I don't like those stitches. Those aren't really very nice. And I said, so Blanche, do you think I can redo them? She goes, well, you can't redo your life. But if you want to, I mean, you know, you can try. Because there's some sense that we don't reject an ugly stitch. If it won't hold the garment together, we might say, well, maybe we don't want it to fall apart. Although it will fall apart probably eventually, if you wear it enough.
Or if you make the stitches a little further apart, then you have to keep redoing them.
Yeah, there's other kind of funny things that happen. If the stitches are bigger, they wear away quicker because there's more surface area, right? So there's... Thank you very much. Thank you for displaying this. Fragrance packet. So there's some stories about how these things originated, which I think are kind of sweet. So I'll tell some bedtime stories for us on this warm evening. Entertain us a little, but I like them. By the way, just this particular way of sewing, priests and lay people's Buddha's body, Buddha's garments, is called something called Nyoho-e. And it's sort of like the authentic clothes, authentic Buddha's body, as opposed to the fake ones. And so Nyo is like things as they are, as in like ta-ta-ta, suchness maybe, you might think of that. Ho is like the Dharma or the teaching or the law of it, and A is just clothing or robe. So it's like the real deal. So here's some stories about how this business originated of sewing robes and having our little uniforms, Buddhist uniforms. So apparently, around Buddha's time, during his time, you know, a lot of people started following him. And one of them was a king called Bimbisara. And King Bimbisara was cruising around on his elephant. And saw someone who he thought was an ordained monk, Buddhist monk, in India, and hopped off of his elephant, which is probably not an easy thing to do. I guess elephants, you know, they gotta like either get down so you can get off and go to the trunk, and then he like goes onto the dirty ground and makes three prostrations, and he looks up and he's like, oh, that's like some, you know, Hindu. How do I know who's who around here? So next time he saw Buddha, he said, Buddha, like, can you guys get a uniform or something? Because there's all this aesthetics wandering around India seeking enlightenment, but you're the one who's really got it. I don't want to make a mistake. And Buddha said, sure. So then later, Buddha's wandering around, thinking about the uniform, and talks to one of his main disciples, Ananda. Ananda is a cool disciple. His name means bliss. But I like Ananda. Ananda was like a friend of women. When women wanted to join the Buddhist Sangha and be ordained, Buddha was like, no way, you can't do it right now. And they went to Ananda. Actually, Ananda saw them crying outside the gate. The nuns actually, the first nuns self-ordained before Buddha did. They shaved their head and put on robes and wailed outside the gate. And Ananda saw them and had compassion and was supportive. He was an early feminist. And said, Buddha, hey, you know, let these women ordain. So Ananda is an interesting character. But also, Buddha and Ananda were walking around, and Buddha had a thought and said, I think we should like make these Buddha uniforms out of some kind of discarded fabric, maybe, but like I like the rice paddies and how the rice paddies are these sort of rectangular, you know, plots that are somewhat slightly random, but all the beings like live in harmony together, their lotuses blooming in them and pigs rooting around snakes and stuff like that. So Ananda said, yeah, I think I can do that. So Ananda was the first person to sew, allegedly, which I thought was kind of interesting. So he whipped up some robes. And usually these robes, early robes, were taken from fabric that had been discarded, something called pamsula. And there is some sense that the fabric, now this is not true of this fabric that we have, this fabric all y'all have. This, your fabric did not come from grave sites or charnel grounds. Or as far as I know, they were not chewed on by rats. Or, let's see what else. There's a whole bunch of recommendations that Dogen cites for discarded clothing. Chewed by oxen, chewed by rats, cloth from corpses. They said people throughout, this is Dogen from the Kesa Kodoku, Power of the Robe, people throughout India throw away such cloth on streets or fields, just as we do with excrement cleaning cloth. So a robe of discarded cloth is actually a robe of excrement cleaning cloth. Practitioners pick up such cloths, wash them, and repair them for use. There can be pieces of silk or common cloth among them. Give up discrimination between silk and common cloth and study the meaning of discarded cloth. Long ago, a monk washed such a robe of discarded cloth in Anavatapa Lake. And then when the dragon king then rained down flowers in admiration and respect. So maybe I should make one of those robes. The dragon king will rain down some flowers. So there's some sense that this teaching of non-discrimination too. So sometimes I notice, like, we have this little uniform, right? Like, rakusus tend to be blue, and okesas for trainee priests like myself tend to be black, and fully ordained priests get these sort of golden robes, brownish golden robes. And people are like, I want to sew a different color. Or I don't want that cotton or that kind of Pima cotton or Kona cotton, that Hogetsu. I want some silk. Or I want a real discarded cloth that a rat chewed on, just like Buddhism. You know, like people come up, I want it my way. And this is what happens in our practice. So this business of robe sewing is pretty interesting to my mind in this regard. That our mind shows up our preferences and our tendency to want something or not want something, or, you know, confusion often shows up when people are sewing. I don't know how that happened. I don't know. What do you think happened? You sewed this wrong, you know. That's all that happened. Like, you know, oh, but I didn't really want to. I thought I knew. Well, you didn't actually. So delusion, you know, greed, hate, and delusion is it's inescapable in the sewing process. I'm lucky that, like, I don't know anything about sewing. So when I learned how to sew, I didn't know what I was doing, and I still don't. You know, like, I don't pretend to, because, like, I wasn't a quilter or some, like, seamstress. Some people are, like, you know, professional sewers, and they're professional fabric artists. And I think, like, for them, it's probably kind of freaky to have somebody tell them how to do this. You know, just sew here. What do you mean, just sew here? I could do it better this way, you know? So, so my ignorance was quite right there for me. Now, Dogen also says something else about, when I say this robe, or I mean rakusus too, these are full-fledged robes. They just happen to be cooler because you just hang them around the neck. So it says, you should know that a kshaya, which is another name for Buddha's robe, is what all Buddhas respect and take refuge in. It is the Buddha body, the Buddha mind. It is called the clothing of emancipation, the robe of the field of benefaction, the robe beyond form, the unsurpassable robe, the robe of patience, the Tathagata's robe, the robe of great love and great compassion, the robe as a victorious banner, and the robe of unsurpassable, complete enlightenment. Receive it indeed with utmost respect. This is why you should not alter it. That's pretty intense. But I think this is just equivalent to Zazen. All those things are Zazen. And so maybe it's kind of nice to have robes that we can, like, walk around. We get up off our cushion and we still have our robes on if we have them. But actually, like I said, your skin is your robe, so you still have your skin. So you're walking around with this precious body that is none other than the body of Buddha. (Clears throat) I'll tell... Do I have time for another story?
Yes.
A couple stories. Okay, good. So Dogen, I don't know where this story comes from, and I've heard it told in different ways, in different places, which is even better. But there was a nun, an early Buddhist female disciple. I don't like the word nun, it sounds weird. Buddhist early female disciple, one of the original ones, one of the ones that Buddha ordained. Be careful with this bowl and robe business. You know, often when you get ordained, when Buddha was ordaining people and giving them the precepts, he was also like, they needed some special equipment, the robe, and also eating bowls and some other things. And sometimes people would come to Buddha and say, Buddha, will you ordain me? And Buddha said, oh yeah, sure. Got your robe and bowl? And they're like, oh, rats, I forgot it. I've got to go and get it. And on the way getting it, they would get run over and killed by a mad cow. So it's good to keep these items close. At hand. Seriously. It's like, and Buddha would say, well, even if that person wasn't ordained, they were such an amazing practitioner that they're going to achieve Buddhahood next life. But anyway, there was this nun, her name was Dipalavana, and she's actually was such an attained person, she was a shapeshifter. She could embody different forms. Because sometimes you, I don't know, get special powers. Like you can sit for a long time in 25 yards of fabric in a warm Chicago night. But Utpalavana was a shapeshifter and very attained. She had special powers. But she also, this tells a story, she was encouraging noble women to become nuns. And they said to her, what do you mean? We're young and beautiful. It would be hard for us to keep the precepts. And Upalavana said, it's all right to break the precepts. Leave the household first. That is, receive your robe first. Wear Buddha's body first. And then the women said, but if we break the precepts, we will fall into hell. How can we do that? And Upalavana said, then go ahead and fall into hell. Or wear an okesa on a warm Chicago night. And they all laughed and said, we'd be punished in hell. How can we fall into hell? And Upalavana said, you know, reflecting on my former life, I was an entertainer, a showgirl, I guess, putting on various costumes and speaking memorized lines. And in this former life, one of the things she did is she put on an okesa and made fun of it. But even though she later got into some trouble and grew arrogant, she says, and broke a precept, because she even touched that robe, she was reborn and then became enlightened in her life. So it's kind of an auspicious thing even to be able to hang out with these wonderful things, says Dogen. So that's a story. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I like the thing in this story of like, she's like, break the precepts. Because if you receive the precepts and you think you're not going to break them, you've probably already broken them. You know? So it's how do we, if you think you're going to sew this many stitches and not make a mistake, one little mistake maybe, like one stitch might not be quite as close or as far from each other as the other one. If you think that that's not going to happen, that's scary to me. You might be lying to yourself. And so this is an encouragement to be fully who you are. And it doesn't say, just go ahead and break the precepts. It says, take refuge in Buddha and Dharma and Sangha. So this final little story that I will tell comes from this new book that's a Seeds of Virtue, Seeds of Change, a collection of Zen teachings. And somehow, I don't know how this happened, but all the authors appear to be female. Even though it says nothing that these are just about, oh, here it says, for the first time, 27 Soto Zen women priests come together to offer teachings. But it so happens, I was looking at this book and I said, oh, there is one by this woman named Myoshin Kate McCandless. Do you know Kate? Were you at Taiji with her? Did you see her?
But I think I've met her at CBH. She's a Norman student.
Yeah, she is. And Michael Newton's her husband. So being the Zen zealot that I am, I was doing a retreat one time in Zen Center, and I had this roommate. And you know, like you always want to have your own room, but this person, Kate McCandless, showed up. And she lived in Japan for a long time, and I spoke Japanese and knew Shohaku and blah, blah, blah. Lived in Taiji for a while, but back in the old days. But she was really great. She was like this amazing roommate. We hardly said a word to each other, but I found myself bringing her gifts and like, but there was something really lovely about her, and we talked a little bit. So I had to take a look at this, and and she quotes this story. Actually, this talk is entitled "The State of No Mistakes," and it was one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite topics. But nonetheless, this is actually a little story for Taigen, because the story she tells is about our great, more recent ancestor. You know, only like I don't know. 1,000 years ago or something, instead of like in Buddha's time. But Dongshan. And of course, Taigen's just written a book about Dongshan. And this is about Dongshan and his Dharma friend, Uncle Mi, Shenshan. So Dongshan says to Uncle Mi, to his Dharma brother and friend, I always love their dialogues. This is actually from Dogen's compilation of koans, or I don't know anything about this because I haven't read these. I'm sure Taigen knows tons, but I read this one in Kate's thing. I've read this before in other sewing teacher things, but it says, "What are you doing?" Dongshan says to me. Like, isn't it obvious? Me is sewing. He says, "I'm sewing." And Dongshan says, "How are you sewing?" And Shenshan, Uncle Mi, says, one stitch after another. Pretty good, right? Just one event after another. And Dongshan, in his kind way, sassy way, says, we've been traveling together for 20 years. How can you say such a thing? He's like, dude, give me more than that. And so Mi's like, okay, I've heard this one before. What would you say, elder brother? And Dongshan says, each stitch is like the earth spewing a flame. Whew. Okay, so when we take refuge, you know, each intention is like that. You know, the flame burning our lives completely. Yeah. I'd like to sing our little Dharma song. But I think maybe we'll wait, and I'd like to hear your songs. So tell me, bring it on, Bodhisattvas. Jenny.
Guys, I really enjoyed your stories about sewing. Since I sewed so recently, and I had heard only the line from Blanche about this is your mind. with that some time ago, and it is just so true. It just in the sewing of this rakusu, I was just forced. It just felt like zazen on steroids. It was just inescapable how you face. You have to face your own mind. And my delusions, my resistance, and so when you just talked about that line, which I have heard, that you are to take refuge with every stitch, that is a huge conundrum for me, because I am finding this whole process so unsettling, and how do you take refuge in it?
So, did you see your mind of compassion as well, of kindness, of generosity?
Maybe tiny inklings from time to time. For the most part, Ogetsu, in truth, I was like, every stitch, oh damn, that one's not straight either. That one's way too big. Oh, I keep them even? And over and over and over again, and seeing that, and then thinking, I thought I knew how to sew. And realizing that this isn't sewing the way I want.
So how are you able to chant Namaki Utsu with all that stuff going on?
Well, that's so hard. trying to calm your mind at the same time that you're having to see it, your mind is like challenging.
It's great effort, great patience that you have.
Well, it was hard to give up, you know, to say, I can't be perfect at this. I can't be. So maybe that was the only times when I felt, okay, I can take refuge now. But now I have to look at this thing. So it's not over.
I remember some of my teachers holding rakusus and looking at them and just smiling, going, everyone is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure when I look at yours, that's what I feel.
Well, there was something very, very special about receiving it back. Mm-hmm. It really was. And it has a fantastic backside.
With your beautiful Dharma name on it. Kathy.
Thank you for your talk, and it's forced me to think back through and remember making my rakusu and working, watching other people.
PTSD? PTSD?
Yeah. Well, no, but seeing yourself. You really do, you know, and it's like I'm a little more arrogant than Jenny. In that, when I made this, I was working with Karen, and I ended up in a hurry at the end, so we had to go out to Wisconsin to meet with her, and it was like, okay, I had to have a certain amount done, so when I saw her again, we could put the border frame on. And I was talking on the phone, and she said something that's good. I just was like, I got this. And so I cut the white inner part. And it turned out that I cut it too short. I mean, so it doesn't come all the way down to the end of the you know, and...
The frame.
The frame. And it's like, at the time, I was like, in a defensive style, like, big deal. You know?
It's called delusion.
But now, you know, since then, I'm a little chagrined because it is beginning to wear right there because it you know, it's the crease at the wrong place.
Yeah.
And it's not reinforced there, so it's kind of getting a little more sloppy. But it's like, you know, it makes you see yourself that, you know, sometimes you jump ahead and you know, and I can do that and be oblivious to the fact that I did it. You know, until you see it, and then it's no fun to see it. So
now you're awakened. Like Dogen says, right? Buddhists are those who are awakened to their delusion.
Well, maybe to a little bit. Maybe I'm awakened a little bit. To this
a lot. Great.
Any other comments or questions for Hogetsu? Well, thank you very much for talking to us about Buddha's robe. Thank you for being here. It used to be that people who wanted to sit this had to go up to Wisconsin like Kathy did, but now we have our own sewing teacher. So thank you very much. Yeah.